So, Michael, I think almost any pilot, with their hand on the throttle, the plane in the air, the stall, warning horn on, even if they're not going to try and go around, they're going to try and cushion that landing. And they're certainly not going to raise the flaps. But you advocated letting the plane come down hard with just enough power so that it didn't wreck the airplane, hopefully. Can you expand on that? Why is that the better choice?
Well, Jeff, when I think about a pilot under pressure at a smaller airport, has just had two fairly significant bounces, panic is starting to set in. And I just would question their ability to actually add a little bit of power, hold the nose cushion without actually hitting the nose gear and causing something worse. And so when I look at it as they've bounced the second time, the airplane it's in the air in the landing attitude. If they raise the flaps, it's just going to come down in that same attitude fairly hard and hopefully not too hard. So, and I looked at it as that's a way to put all three wheels on the ground. You've spilled the lift, so now the brakes are going to work and just hope you're going to stop instead of trying to really rescue a bad situation, which I'm not sure they have the talent maybe to do.
You know, and this is a classic problem of low time pilots. You don't know what you don't know. And it took me a lot of hours, you know, when you start to have one of those oscillating landings where you've bounced and you're back in the air, the adding power, the right amount of power, and then the cushion is something that doesn't just happen. You learn that. And I don't know how to say it. You get the rhythm of flying, the rhythm of how to salvage a crappy landing, because we all have had crappy landings that bounce and we learn how to salvage them. But you can't, if you don't know that this is the challenge is, you know, someone who doesn't know how to salvage the landing might also, you're asking them to have the experience to accept the crash, which is even harder decision, I think. It's one of those things where I'm having a hard time not wanting to at least goose it so I can do the cushion. But again, I already know. I know how, you know, if I'm in the air with the stall horn, if I give it enough power, I can now bring it down and flare with that last bit of energy that, you know, the wing's already unloaded, but I can give a little more energy with the prop blast, get it so that I have a less hard landing. But again, I know that because I know how to salvage a landing. And it's hard for a inexperienced pilot to be able to pull this one.
You know, the striking thing to me about this scenario is that, first of all, the pilot did a great job of preparation. You know, he went out and was ready. And yet they find themselves in this horrible situation in which they're committing to pretty much to sacrifice their airplane, that they're gonna go off the end of their runway. And in this pilot's mind, that's probably tantamount to this is an insurance claim at the very least. But, you know, I applaud the pilot for making that decision and the pilot's priority for protecting the occupants of the airplane. And if that's the case, I would think the right thing to do would be to raise the gear, not the flaps. Raise the gear, belly in. You're going to stop a lot quicker that way, less likely to overturn in the terrain off the runway. And you know, it's a awful situation. F-33 is a wonderful airplane. You hate to see one get crunched here. But you know, in just a clear-eyed look at this situation of protecting the occupants, that seems to me to be the right thing to do.
This is a classic setup that this pilot got caught in also. He looked at the windsock. He couldn't tell whether it was 2.5 or 7. So undoubtedly, he probably had some tailwind on this landing. That's my guess. And that tailwind is such an evil thing. He practiced landings, which was good. To his credit, he went out and practiced his short fields. But he probably didn't practice them with a quartering tailwind, and that changed the whole picture for him. And it just happens so frequently when you've got a wind that's just 90 degrees to the runway.
Well, building both on David and Wally there, I also commend the pilot for practicing ahead of time, but the practice was done solo at a fairly light weight, at a fairly forward center of gravity, and then he called it good and loaded the airplane up to maximum gross weight aft end of the envelope. So if you're, I do commend the pilot for having done that exercise ahead of time. Perhaps an even better way to have done that would have been to ballast the airplane so that it would have been something approximating the actual condition that it was going to be in, because it does change the center of gravity location, does change the handling quite a bit.
Well, and he did it, though, at Pittsfield at his home airport on a runway. I'd have to look. Pittsfield is like 100 feet wide or something like that. So we've got runway illusion issues here, too, that may play into the whole scenario. So he didn't it's great that he practiced, but he practiced kind of for the wrong runway, just for the length, which we get so focused on, and not for the width, which is a whole issue and into itself.
Well, and then one more thing. When you're practicing, if you are going to practice short fields, doing it at your home drone, where everything is a known, you know exactly where you pull power, everything happens by almost instinct. If you go to a field that you're just less familiar with, your practice has a lot more bearing on the scenario, because you're having to figure out where to turn base, where to turn final, in a way that isn't as intuitive. I think also the fully loaded airplane is another factor. Again, most pilots, most of our GA experience is by yourself, maybe with one occupant in the front seat. And a loaded airplane is a different airplane. And I don't think most pilots do a lot of practice at full gross. And it's a totally different airplane. They climb so pathetically. And it's just like when you solo and the first time you have somebody out of the right seat, wow, this thing's a hot rod. And it's the opposite when you it's a dog when it's a full airplane. And they do behave a lot different.
I think, some of the keys are in the answers here, and that the last two options involved the word hope, right? And you got your family on board, and hope is not a strategy, in any situation when you're flying. So that kind of limits you to those first two options that you should take there.
Well, let me address that directly. This pilot has their hand, like I said, on the throttle. I mean, they are in the go-around position. And building on something Mike said, Michael said that he wouldn't go into Chester because he had 200 hours in his Cirrus. This pilot, or a pilot in a situation like this could have 200 hours total. So how do you possibly expect somebody to accept the crash, to actually say, yep, I'm going to do the hard thing and ruin an airplane that I might be able to save here? It's in your hand. How do you pull that off?
You know what is really good instruction on this is backcountry pilots. You talk to backcountry pilots, Mike, and I know you've done that a lot. They think about this because they go into one-way strips where there is no go-around option. And to your point, you can't make that decision in the moment. I'm convinced you can't do it. That's a premeditated decision. And then you have to have the discipline to execute it, that once you pass a certain spot, one way or another, this airplane's going on the ground. But if you try to do that in the moment, you'll always go for the hope strategy and power up and hope you clear the trees.
And that's so true. One of the things is most of my landings are short field. So it's one of those things where the need to practice short field, I actually need to practice long landings, because I'm always in the short field mode. It's just it's one of those things you do. But again, you a lot of these are one-way strips. So the word final approach is that. It's final. And there are very few options once you have committed to final. You have committed to landing the airplane, crashing the airplane. One of the things also, though, is I've written for aviation safety before on the issue of how many accidents of people getting weak performance, usually it's on takeoff, but again, where you're looking at the option where you might be able to make something and people try to get in the air. Trying, if the word is trying or hope, getting in the air is bad. If you are near the ground, go for the ground, because getting further from the ground just adds energy to the accident. Again, it's counterintuitive. You want to be in the air. It feels like that's what you want to do. But there's less energy on the ground if you can do it. And I kind of have a little exception with David wanting to gear up. To me, I want to spread the crash as far as I can. And yeah, I don't want to be inverted, but making pulling the gear so that I will come to an abrupt stop, no, I want to spread that energy as long as I can. At the same time, I don't want to flip inverted. So I don't have enough experience in retractables to feel like I have an intuitive thing. I'm going to rip the gear off before I take a, you know, just push it in without the gear.
It's obvious that our pilot missed his chance to save this airplane when he became unstabilized on his initial approach. That was his place to safely go around and not have to do the hope. At the airline I worked for, we used to grade a form that we would use for proficiency checks, and one of the columns on that form was readiness for a go-around. We were interested to see how a crew prepared themselves for go-arounds, even though they intended to land. And I recently rode with a fellow that I felt did a very professional job, and as we were approaching the airport in his preliminary checklist, he announced, "It's okay to go around today. If I get unstabilized, I'm going to go around." He just said that to himself. And that guy was ready for a go around.
Yeah, I actually do that myself too. I can always, I'm saying that out loud myself. You can always go around. You can always go around. But building on what Michael said in his response, the solution to this entire scenario was to back up to that short final point. You said 300 feet. Somewhere in that very area, anyhow, we need to make a decision whether or not we can commit to getting closer to the ground at this point. We as flight instructors will tell a student, go around. You know, in a training environment, we create the conditions that cause them to go around. I hope that real-world go-around situations occur with my students. But you've got to be ready to make that decision, not when once you know even the pavement's under the wheels. Back it up to 300 to 500 feet above ground level, and you're looking for four criteria. You're on speed. You're in the configuration, the landing configuration for the airplane. You're on glide path to your predicted touchdown zone, and you're in alignment with the runway. You're compensating for crosswinds. And if you're not in all four of those, if you're not in that window when you're at that short final point, that's when you go around. You don't wait till you're in the flare to see if you're compensating for the crosswind. You don't wait until you float past that midway point to make a decision. You've got to back that up.
You know, in the backcountry pilots, abort point. You know, that whole concept of having an abort point is so helpful. And for most of the airports that we GA pilots fly to, you know, the abort point is somewhere on the rollout. You know, we can still go around in a short field or an obstructed field. It may be well before that. And in this pilot's preparation for landing, you know, he had identified maybe the halfway mark. But it's like, you know, the further you back that abort point up, the better. And, you know, an eighth of a mile final, 200 feet, 500 feet, wherever you put it, you know, I find it to be a tremendously helpful concept.
One more thing to think about, Jeff, and that is, I wouldn't expect somebody to think of this in the moment, but maybe sort of background that influences your intuition. In aviation, we have far more landing accidents than we do takeoff and climb out accidents. However, they're substantially less fatal. So you're more likely to have a landing accident, but more likely to survive it. And in this case, if you decide to go take off and that doesn't work well for you, you're much more likely to have that end in a fatality. So something just to consider about if you're coming in this kind of scenario, I'll take my chances. Oh, Bob Hoover's, you know, recommendation to all of us, fly the aircraft all the way through the crash. I'd rather do that on the landing than on a takeoff climb out.
So I'll put this out to the table here. Is it a valid thing, just like having that abort point for the landing and say, I can go around today, to verbalize to yourself, now I'm committed to this land? Like you actually say past a certain point, okay, now I'm committed to this landing one way or another, you know, to everyone in the plane, even if it's just you.
You know, I interviewed a crop duster, and he referred to it as flipping the switch, that you have preloaded decisions. You know, again, my abort point, once you flip the switch, we're not aborting. So once you flip the switch, you make a absolutely positive decision. This is going to end on the ground. And again, so you have to flip the switch. When are you going to, you know, when is the opportunity to abort a landing not an option anymore? You have to accept it. So again, when you have that preloaded decision-making, thinking about it, okay, no, I am committed to land. And, you know, in this case, we had the guy was at a 50% down the runway. He's committed to land. And I think, but if you don't kind of pre-brief that in your head and set it up as a switch, it's a binary choice, on or off. And as soon as you flip the switch, it is off. You don't have the option to take off again. And again, I 100% agree. You're better, way better accepting an awful landing, even a crash, than trying to get it back up in the air after making some huge mistakes. And in this case, one of the things, chances are what Wally said earlier was he has a tailwind. You know that in hindsight. In the moment, you just know that this is not going the way you plan. You probably haven't processed that this is a tailwind that's making this so bad. It's better to process that on the ground at the crash site than in the trees where the accident energy is way higher.
Then let's take a moment and say, well, what if the person did the thing that's probably more intuitive? They power up, they pitch for VX, maybe they, you know, they retract the flaps to the best possible position, and they are not going to make it. So how do you best fly it into the trees? Like, how does somebody handle that situation?
Well, you pick the avenue, right? I'll go back to that adage of fly it as far into the crash as possible. Don't leave it up to chance. I mean, you're going to have a few seconds to look out and see. There's probably my clearest path. Mike mentioned it earlier. If you can dissipate that energy, and all you really need is probably about 100 feet. If you can dissipate your energy over 100 feet, you're likely to survive. The big thing you got to avoid is sudden impact. However that happens, don't stall spin for sudden impact. Don't hit dead on into a tree for sudden impact. That's the path you got to figure out.
You know, and exactly that. Reducing, spreading the crash, and then the other thing is avoiding downward G's. Forward G's, the body can handle a lot of forward G's. Direct down, we're not built for the direct down G's, which is, again, one of the reasons that in the scenario I wanted to cushion that blow. I think the body can take 7 or 11 G's down before injury, whereas forward we can take like 100 G's. It's a lot more before you start breaking things. We just aren't built for downward forces.
Well, Michael can probably take more G's total than all of us at the table. But still, that is a really good point. Before we close out, there's one more thing I want to go back to, which is this runway that is super narrow. And, you know, relative to the fact that it's short, it's really, really narrow. We're talking about coming up with an abort point on final. But in an environment where your normal cues are off, how can a pilot normalize something in this kind of unfamiliar situation to something they are familiar so that they can make a good check at eighth mile final so that it's useful information?
Well, one of the things, and it may not help entirely with the visualization, but one of the things is to be in the habit of always being landing aligned with the center line. And if it's a grass field, it may not have a center line, but staying in the center, having the discipline to stay in the center. And then in that case, as you're coming down final, approach alignment, you know, staying aligned with the prepared surface is easier. The visual cue, I think, is going to come from experience. And you might even, you know, make, you know, the time-honored method of dragging a field, making a low pass to get a better look at it before you come in to finally land on it, making certain that you actually look in the chart supplement or whatever documentation you have to determine, you know, don't look just at the runway length, but also look at the runway width and realize that is going to have an impact on your visual before you come into the airport.
You know, I find when I go to an unfamiliar airport, particularly an unfamiliar obstructed airport or a challenging airport, my own tendency is to be high. And I think that's true of most pilots. So knowing that, you know, I'll pick out some points that it's like, okay, I'm going to be at a particular altitude and I'm going to be on speed and I'm going to resist the urge to be high, which is my natural tendency. A few things like that. So it's like we can help ourselves by knowing ourselves and counteract our predilection to make certain errors.
You know, Michael, I kind of like that this was your scenario because, you know, your career is about being like at the pinnacle, like being the best at what you do in that aviation circle. And as pilots, that's something we like in ourselves. We like to feel like we're the best or striving to be the best at something, the best we can do it. And this pilot did pretty well. up to a certain point of like trying to prepare and talking to someone who was there and making adjustments and a nice long final. And they were looking at the departing aircraft and then it got beyond them. So something that I think could happen to anyone, and maybe in all of our thinking about aviation, there is a place for being the best at making the best possible crash that we can make.